you know that this half honor program, we are mentioning suicide will come up, specifically the risk to intersex and trans people. The Williams Institute at UCLA Law School says transgender people have the same suicide risk factors as cisgender people, plus additional risk factors associated with minority stress and lack of access to gender-affirming medical care. A study by the Trevor Project finds intersex youth are also more prone than other queer kids to considering taking their own lives. Now, as you know, in the United States, literally hundreds of bills have been introduced at the state level designed to restrict access to gender-affirming care, particularly gender-affirming care for children and teens. On both sides of the issue, people say they are determined to protect kids, as in Kentucky, where one of the bills became law 6 months ago.
It's our top story at 6. Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us. I'm Doug Proffitt. The law that bans gender-affirming care for transgender young people is now a reality in Kentucky. And it would revoke doctors' licenses if they provide gender-affirming care to minors. WHS 11's Connor Steffens in Frankfurt right now, where he saw all sides of this development today. Connor?
Senator Karen Berg has been on the front lines of opposition geared toward this bill since it was introduced back in February. It was just 3 months ago that her trans son Henry took his own life. She had this to say at the end of a very emotional no vote to Kentucky's queer youth.
Do not give up hope.
But supporters continue to tout the bill would empower parents, including bill sponsor Senator Max Wise.
There's evidence that this is harmful to children. And that's our job, is to protect children, and that's what we're doing here.
Here is something that might come as a surprise to you. Many of those bills in the United States have exclusions to allow for continued medical intervention on children who are born intersex, even at ages when they are far, far too young to in any way consent to that. Here in Canada, the advocacy group EGAL has taken legal action against the feds over a criminal code provision that prohibits female genital mutilation, but exempts from criminal liability certain surgeries on intersex children intended to, quote unquote, normalize their sexual appearance. So let us find out more about all this from Veronica Merrifield. Veronica is originally from England, now lives in Cape Breton, where she founded the Cape Breton Transgender Network. She speaks publicly about being intersex. Veronica Merrifield, a very warm welcome to Main Street. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the introduction.
Well, and thank you for being here. I'm wondering what you know about, are these type of surgeries performed on intersex children born here in Nova Scotia?
It seems to be under some sort of debate. As I understand it, they're not meant to happen. But the couple of parents that I've met and talked to about it have concerns about those surgeries being performed. You mentioned the EGAL action, mm-hmm. and the wording there that they were asking for, and the wording that the Canadian Bar Association are talking about is that no surgery will happen to an infant without their meaningful participation in the process. And that's an important one because a lot of these surgeries that do happen obviously don't get it right. There's some statistics are claimed that they get it right in 50% of the cases, which indicates that they get it wrong in 50% of the cases. Yeah. And those can have fairly devastating effects on children, youth and adults as they grow up, both psychologically and for their overall health.
And Veronica, I want to come back to that, and if you're comfortable, talk about your own experience with that, mm-hmm. with the choice other people made about your body and your identity before as an infant. But first of all, are there any reasons, non-cosmetic or medical reasons, that a surgery may be performed, or you know, a choice, I guess, may be made for an intersex baby?
the choices that should be made are purely based on, or should purely be made on function. Mm-hmm. So if someone's physical appearance means that they cannot void their bladder, for instance, which is one of the common things, then that surgery obviously needs to happen right away. But there shouldn't be any reason for any other surgeries to be taking place until somebody knows who they are. And obviously we don't know that. And given that the intersex appears at around a 2% rate in Western cultures, the statistic is sometimes given that there are more people that are intersex than have red hair. These shouldn't be done, yeah. But intersex isn't just a condition that's always visible at birth. Some of these conditions take a while before they become known. So in teenagers, for instance, if certain parts of or progresses of puberty aren't happening, they might go to a medical professional to seek help and find that the intersex condition is discovered then. So some of these conditions are to do with androgen insensitivities, some of them are to do with genetic differences, some of them are to do where the SRY marker is on the gene, whether that's on the X or the Y. And some people have XXY or XXXY and so on. One of the issues I think that we have to look at is the amount of gatekeeping that happens for those that are born intersex and what that says about the definitions of what is male and what is female. Nature doesn't decide what is male and female. We as a species effectively have decided what's male and female, and we have decided where male ends and intersex begins and where intersex ends and female begins.
And is it going back to, as you talk about, you know, the spectrum of intersexuality, if that is a term, and forgive me if it's not, but the spectrum of how it can be manifest in a person, in their identity, in their physical body, is this something that someone could live their entire life and then and never know?
Certainly. And there are some people whose intersex condition only gets found out during an autopsy. So for some, it doesn't affect them at all, or it might affect them, but they don't realize it's affecting them. And for others, it's visible right at birth. So, you know, again, we get back to these conditions are extremely variable. There's an entire spectrum. And it's, for me, that talks about the spectrum of sex and how that might align with the spectrum of gender as well.
Mm-hmm. And Veronica, when you say, I'm trying to figure out how these choices are made for people who are not the individual. And you said, I think a 50%, we could call it success rate or a failure rate. Really, at that number, right?
Correct.
So, and I'm not trying to be trite at all, but that sounds like a coin toss that people are making this decision based on.
Well, I would imagine it probably is, and I would imagine it's probably predicated on what medical professionals define as being male and female, and what they see as being presented and which it might be closer to. But I would also imagine that parental preference may play a role. I don't know enough about what happens behind those closed doors when those discussions happen. I only know what the few parents that have come to me to talk about it. And they're usually talking to me about what do they do going forward rather than what do they do regarding, you know, trying to make those medical decisions. And my advice on the medical conditions is you do the minimum necessary to preserve function and leave everything else as is.
When parents are coming to you, then they're coming after an intervention in some cases and asking you how to go forward, like what?
They're usually coming to me after the birth has happened and they've been in discussions.
Okay.
Yeah. So during my time in Nova Scotia, that's only happened twice. But I can imagine that there's a lot more happening out there. Some of these conditions exist in sort of one in 15,000. There's a number of conditions that all have that kind of percentage. So as a 2%, you could imagine that you might be seeing these sort of one in several hundred, for instance, that might have some sort of physical attribute where it becomes a discussion point. I recently did an education session for some doulas, and they weren't aware of a lot of this information. So I'd imagine that there's a lot of information that's missing. And earlier in the year, the Dalhousie Medical School approached me to help with some of their training cases for intersex, which had great medical information but were light on how do you deal with the patient in front of you, how do you deal with the parents in front of you.
That's a good sign that you're being called in on this.
It's a really good sign, and I'm hoping that that gets expanded. But yes, it is a good sign.
I am speaking with Veronica Merrifield. Veronica is the founder of the Cape Breton Transgender Network. She speaks publicly about being intersex. She is in our studio in Sydney. And we're going to have more on this conversation after a quick look at traffic with Brian Ray.
Yeah, just a couple of quick updates for you. It looks like Main Street, that construction going on near Cherry Brook is either done, or at least that long lineup is starting to clear out. So that looks much better. I'm not seeing a delay anyways as you're approaching the Forest Hills Parkway, so that's some good news. I am, though, seeing a delay on the 118 inbound, just heading past Dartmouth Crossing, heading towards that 111 on-ramp. Not entirely sure what's going on there. We'll try to find out. 902-222-3802, the number to call, or send us a text if you have any tips.
Thank you, Brian. Tomorrow is Intersex Awareness Day. We are very lucky to have with us now Veronica Merrifield, who is will be tomorrow taking part in a flag raising at 10:30 tomorrow morning at City Hall in Sydney. Are you okay talking about your experience?
I am. It's a complicated one, but I am. So I identify as intersex and trans because my journey was a trans journey. I was raised male. I knew I was female at 4 years old, and I can still remember that moment when that realization was upon me. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like permanently etched, and I can remember, you know, how hot it was that day, the sounds that are around me, that kind of thing. It wasn't until I was 8 that I asked for help and was told, God doesn't make mistakes, no. And I had to, I didn't have that support that so many really do need, particularly from a young age, which is why, for me, that education piece is so important. And yet, I did attempt suicide in my teens, and it wasn't until a bit later that I got on my journey to got my the medical journey. But it wasn't until surgery that the intersex condition was discovered. And I have a pretty good idea that it was discovered at birth and kept from me. And that was not uncommon. It took quite a long time before I came across other people around the world that have similar stories. And this is one of the pieces around why the internet and support groups based on a virtual platform are so useful, being able to connect a fairly small proportion of the population together over a common issue and find that you're not the only one is a really important piece. So yeah, there's all that in the background.
And so you were told God doesn't make mistakes, but it does seem that someone did at a certain point, right? Like they chose, they, you know, if they're 50%, like you ended up on the wrong side of that. And what you said, that led you to the edge of suicide. Like
It actually led me to suicide. I attempted to take my life, and that's a familiar story, albeit a very sad story that happens fairly regularly for the trans community, let alone the intersex community. Teen suicides are high. The rate of transgender people who have attempted to take their life is around 60%. And the number of people who have thought about suicides is running in the 90% mark. So there has to be a lot of suicides that happen because people are transgender and feel there's no hope for them before they get medical help. And certainly that seems to be the way that society is pushing things. And seeing the recent protests and the various legislations that are happening in provinces around the country, it would appear that people think that there are only two genders and children should not be educated. But those young children who are transgender and know often feel alone because they haven't had that terminology. I didn't hear about the terminology until I was about 16 or 17 through my interest in music and electronics and discovering Wendy Carlos. So representation and visibility become extremely important so that we can reduce suicide risk.
You have said it is simply incorrect to think that you can tell a person's sex just looking at whether he or she has a Y chromosome. Mm. There are folks out there who would say that that chromosome is chromosomes anyway are the undisputed indicator of sex. What has your life taught you that tells you that it's otherwise?
The vast array of conditions that the medical community already know about. There is one condition where somebody will appear one sex, but during puberty, as the hormones change, they turn to another sex, but that doesn't involve any changes in genetics. And we're not the only species for that to happen. There are other species where sex does change during their development. But issues around things like androgen insensitivity syndrome would indicate that there's more to this than just the X and Y. And we already know, or the medical community already know, that the SRY marker being in different places has a much bigger effect than whether it's X or Y. So you can't tell just by looking at XY or XX.
So science is demonstrating that. Science is bearing that out. It's there at a genetic level, right? We see it.
Yeah.
Do you think that science, you know, the debate that's... yeah, what do you think I'm going to ask?
I don't know.
Do you think that science, that the folks who are struggling with this right now, struggling to get their heads around it, do you think that science is ever going to carry the day for them and they'll go, hey, oh, you know what? Actually, we were wrong about this.
I think it will do at some point when that information becomes more readily available. But if you're not looking for that data, it's hard for you to find that data until it comes out. So somewhere in my collection of interesting stuff, I have a paper from the University of Amsterdam's neurodevelopment team that documents a whole pile of different things that happen during gestation to brain development. But when it gets into things like methylation of testosterone and its effects on DNA and brain development, my scientific background kind of runs out of steam.
Right.
But it's there. And this information, you know, in a more publicly palatable way, I would hope would help people understand that, you know, this common high school biology XXXY is not the entire story. First Nations cultures have multiple terms for gender identities and sex identities. Ancient Hebrew has 8 words in it for gender identities. There's other pieces of history going back thousands of years that show gender and sex differences that are not binary, which begs the question, why are we so into a binary now? What happened to produce that, and what's it going to take beyond just the medical? But yes, the medical research is happening, and it's happening, you know, fairly significantly.
Veronica, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I hope this helps people.
Veronica Merrifield is the founder of the Cape Breton Transgender Network, and she gave us her email. She wanted to share it for anyone who needs or wants to speak with her or be in touch with her. It is veronica@merrifield.ca. And also there's a book about gender and sexual diversity in nature and people called Evolution's Rainbow by the ecologist and evolutionary biologist Joan Roughgarden. That is going to do it for...